Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this.
Politics aside, all right.
All right, because Charlie was frothing at the mouth here about some votes by our senators in Georgia and Congress in general.
Yeah.
We're trying to repeal every good thing we've ever done for consumers and working people like ourselves. Don't get me started. So let's put that aside and talk about what is science. Is that today's topic?
Yeah, that's right. This is episode 206. Mm-hmm. What is science? And I've added a little, not subtitle, but like an alternate title.
Uh-oh.
What are the sciences?
Oh,
because the thing. Okay, so first off,
that's okay. I can live with that.
Excuse me. First off, the Consilience with Pete and Charlie is ending. We are three episodes away. This is the pre-penultimate. What did you say?
Pre-penultimate show before we enter rehab for a full 28 days.
And then there'll be a penultimate and then a ultimate show. Ultimate show, and this is the pre-penultimate.
It is Sunday exactly. At US 30 drag strip.
It is episode 206. What is science? Episode 207 will be what are the humanities, and then episode
the last one will be what is this itch I have on my
exactly
backside?
What is our deal? What's the problem with us? What is consilience? What did we learn?
Yes,
and so I was looking at these in a line. You know, what is science? What are the humanities? And I recognize something that we always say science and the humanities, and there's always that tension between science as a practice and humanities as a study, right? So then we say, what are the sciences? What are the humanities? But even that doesn't quite do it. So that's the thing I want to start with.
Okay.
All right. So what is science? What are the sciences? And we'll put this up against the humanities on the next episode. So I think science is a label for a collection of practices and policies and beliefs.
Hmm. Interesting.
Meaning that science is not... Science is not a thing, obviously. You can't, knock on science. But it is it's an overall term for a way people think of the world, the way people think they can interact with the world, the way that they think of how they practice their profession. Now you're smiling. What's going on?
You're defining science like one from the humanities.
How so?
You're talking about touchy-feely, how we interact with the world, blah, blah, blah.
I feel like
spoken
I
like a humanities,
I feel
humanities
like we should
butthead.
Fight. I feel like I should try and sunglasses on your face,
I mean, most people define science as sort of this enterprise to systematically produce theories and hypotheses that are testable about the physical nature of the universe.
Wow, that was really good. Did you just rip that
I
off
stole
top of
the
head?
Word enterprise from Wikipedia this morning. But normally people break it into two pieces. They break it into this systematic procedure by which we objectively come up with hypotheses and test them. And then the fundamental scientific principles and the technology derived therefrom that comes from it, right? So, and most people think of the second part as most important. It's really the first part that's the most important,
right,
in my opinion.
And when we say the sciences, then we're talking about the subjects or areas of concern that you can apply science to.
And they're typically broken into two pieces, right? So there's more the physical sciences and there's more the social sciences. And we've argued about this before. And the reason why the social sciences are so difficult is because science tells you to no longer be human.
Listen, science doesn't tell you shit, all right?
No,
tell you
to
things.
Be a good scientist, you must not be human. And the problem is science is done by humans.
Did you just
it's run
say
by
to
humans.
Be a good science, you not must not
human.
Be human.
Yes, robots would do science much better.
All right. So there are many philosophers of science and many books have been written about what is science. So I knew that we had to find some kind of in that would just be us. That would be us talking, right? Mm-hmm. So I think this is it. What do you mean, not human?
Because humans are not objective. We are messy, ugly, cognitively biased, crazy beings. And what's the funniest thing about
science?
The reason I have a job making jokes about science is because we attempt to be truly objective, but it's almost impossible for us to do this. And what ensues should be a sitcom on Thursday night.
Okay, so you're saying that people are messy.
Yeah.
But then people are the actors in the enterprise of science.
Yeah, which muddies it up a bit. No, it does. It does. And the farther we get away from
this is like saying,
pure, boring physical
like saying,
science, the more trouble
would be perfect
we get into.
If there weren't any people involved, you know? This, you know, it'd be like saying this: these trains would all run on
Here's
time
what I'm saying.
No one had to drive
Here's what
I'm them,
saying.
You know, or no one had to ride them.
Science attempts to be truly impartial and objective. It's almost impossible for humans to be that 100%, so we get a lot of laughs out of this.
So science,
thank you very much.
Science is actually
I'm dropping the mic now.
A set of rules. Yeah, there's no mic to drop. Come on. Science is a set of rules to try and peel away qualities that are human so that one can learn. I mean, is that...
No. Science really goes after the physical universe. It's when we try to understand humans related to that that we get into trouble.
That's not my question, though. I hear you, but I'm saying that... So if one practices, you know, the principles of science, you're compensating for your human qualities. Is that the idea?
Yes, right. Yeah. We're trying to mediate or suppress or oppress or repress or one of those S words to those human qualities, which is that... I believe this is the way it works. And sometimes you're wrong and you have to be objective. And when the data indicates the opposite, you have to abandon the hypothesis and move on. But it's hard. It's hard for even the most objective scientists to do that because we're human. So I was reminded
you think
of
that people
this.
Actually, you think people might actually discover something, but because it doesn't match what they expect, they're going to ignore it. And science is what sort of keeps you honest?
Yeah, a scientist is less likely to ignore it as opposed to the current president of the United States. Who, anything he doesn't like,
I'm
he just
let
ignores.
I'm going to let that just drift by because remember, I'm trying not to be angry.
I
so
couldn't
really,
help myself.
You're calling the scientific method science.
I'm saying that's the most important part of the two components. Yeah.
Okay, so the scientific method, can you sum that up real quick? No, the answer is no. Okay, can you try to sum it up and fail
what is this,
real quick?
No, let's move on. What is this, McLaughlin report? What was the question again?
Bacon.
Can you use it in a sentence?
How did Francis Bacon
what is the origin of the word?
Invent the scientific method? Was it with chickens? What did he do?
I believe it was with bacon, actually, which is sort of the consilience of all science. Everything leads back to bacon.
Yeah. So scientific method, you know, you try to figure something out by using more than one iteration of the thing, right? Is that kind of...
That is true. This speaks to the idea of consilience, that if you test your hypothesis in more than one way, you feel more confident. If you test it with more than one subject, more than one data point, you feel more confident
about
that.
And let's not forget the control group.
But and it must be testable. It has to be a testable hypothesis. And in general, what scientists try to do is they try to minimize the number of variables. They want to isolate it so they change only one variable and look at that. And the problem with humans, too many variables. Humans are just this mishmash of all sorts of variables. Even biology is a mishmash of lots
science,
of variables.
But science is a human endeavor. The scientific method is a human practice.
Right.
It is human. We may be messy, but this is what we've come up with.
Yeah.
Right? Science is not a... Okay, here's why I get mad at Neil deGrasse Tyson or Neil deGrasse Tyson's public persona.
Okay.
Again, science is not a thing, right? It's not some kind of floating separate entity that we...
It's a lifestyle. You ever notice everything's a lifestyle? Wine isn't a drink. It's a lifestyle.
It is a lifestyle. Oh, you make a good point. It is like science is a lifestyle, right? Practiced by humans, you know,
right?
Made by humans.
Indulged
by humans.
Don't like it. Humans, we're weird. We, you know, we like to have a beer in the booth and talk
what
about politics.
Is it with science then that I mean, science appeals to people who I don't want to offend anyone because I'm not trying to offend.
Too late
folks.
For that.
Yeah. But in this particular way, I'm not. I don't think the people who are scientists or engineers or practitioners or even the skeptics, right? The capital S skeptics. I don't think any of these people are inherently bad. I don't think any of these people are inherently misguided.
Right.
Right. But I feel like the point that I was going for is it seems like when you start to really indulge in science as a viewpoint and a practice and a profession, you get a little bit like huffy about people being people.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I can think of an example.
Okay.
So if you're dealing purely in the physical realm, and say you're a material scientist or a civil engineer.
Okay, I'm a material scientist or a civil engineer.
And you worry about the, you know, how soft asphalt gets when it gets hot.
You know,
right?
You know, Pete, I've been wondering a lot recently. How soft does asphalt get when it gets hot?
But there are simple
are we
things you can
Chicago
measure.
Chicago or Georgia asphalt?
Well, you measure this modulus as a function of temperature. Modulus is how much force you need to deform a material a particular amount. And it's all very objective, and people don't argue about that. It's when you turn the dial more toward the study of complex systems like the biology of humans, the psychology of humans, sociology, these sorts of things. When people, I don't think anyone has a fervent belief about asphalt and its modulus, and then they've been, no, it's, you know. But people have fervent beliefs about.
I'm sure there's someone who can prove you wrong.
Using essential oils and aromatherapy and putting magnets in your shoes, and oh, it makes me feel better. And if you objectively test the effect of magnets in your shoes and on your wristbands and whatever, it's ridiculous.
Well,
and you can quantify it because the magnetic susceptibility of the goo inside you is relatively low. You put someone in a high field superconducting magnet, you can visibly see changes in the human body. And that's, by the way, how magnetic resonance imaging works. So it's very helpful.
Is it called a longitudinal study when you... like let someone practice that for a long time and then check in on that?
You know, that's a good question. I use that in jokes all the time, but what is a longitudinal study?
Well, is latitude the north-south line, so longitude the east-west?
And don't ask me where the big difference is.
So let's abandon that little eddy of conversation. So science, okay, I said people get huffy. They get huffy about people being people, and you were like right there.
And people have beliefs, and we believe them for no good reason sometimes.
Right.
And to me, the nexus of this argument happens in aromatherapy. Because in aromatherapy,
have you been rubbing oil on yourself?
No, but I've been thinking about essential oils because I'm doing a thing on the science of cannabis for the Atlanta Science Festival on the 18th of March. And,
are you saturated in THC right now?
No, I'm not saturated in THC. I'm completely sober. I may have had some caffeine. I had a chai latte on the way.
Hey, and can we take just a moment? I'd like to apologize to everyone. I can't get these levels right. I don't know what's wrong with my voice. I can't hear myself well in my headphones. So if this is like a radically demixed podcast, I apologize. I'm doing my best. My head is full of congestion.
He is doing his best, ladies and gentlemen. I'll vouch for that. Okay. I could see it in his eyes. A very human quality, which is difficult to test objectively.
I can't see your eyes because of that hood you're wearing. What is the... So what's the aromatherapy thing for you?
So I've been studying the... they're very aromatic compounds. It means they're very smelly. Well, aromatic means different things to different people. To an organic chemist, it means
it
uses
certain
phenyl groups in it, right? But it has distinct smells. And I was wondering why all the, you know, patchouli oil smelling hippies out in Humboldt County love the terpenes that are in cannabis, right? So myrcene, limonene, pinene, these sorts of things, carophyllene. And they have very strong scents. And I wondered, when did they first think these did good things medically, right? There are very few studies. The jury is still out on whether or not, you know, myrcene, for example, relieves pain and things like that. But they always studied them as mixtures. So you grab it as a mixture and it has eucalyptus and pinene and all sorts of things.
Oh, eucalyptus makes me feel very good.
And see, that's why this is an interesting one, because at the edge, even if there's no receptor for these terpenes that
in the body, you mean there's no
that clearly triggers some biochemical mechanism, the olfactory sense, psychologists have said this is a definite trigger for certain emotions and thoughts and feelings. I think everyone can relate to aromatherapy. There are, you know, aromas that just make you feel better.
Yeah,
I mean, coffee in the morning
I
makes
very much
people
right
feel
now
better.
Like a menthol eucalyptus lozenge.
Oh, yeah, and those, that does good. Actually have a physical treatment of the symptoms. And yeah, you take a menthol cough drop and you feel better. And that's okay. But it's a secondary effect. It's not actually changing the virus or bacteria count in your body, but it is treating the symptom, and there's nothing wrong with that. So those are something that do have an effect, and it's a real effect, but it's not as strong as some people might believe.
So is science like as a value? Is science the idea that if you have a question, like why do they like this smell, you believe you can find out the answer?
Well, if you can test it, yeah, that is your supposition that you can figure it out.
I mean, is there anything that you think to yourself, I should be able to find out the answer to this, even though you can't?
Well, so usually scientific studies that are plagued by huge variation.
I'm talking about you, Pete. Like, is there something that you say to yourself, I should be able to find out the answer to this, that you find that you have not been able
well,
to?
Well, no. I mean, any of those questions I'm still working on, and I think I still got a reasonable shot.
Huh.
But so economics is a tough one because economics involves people and people do crazy things.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick with that thing. So the point is people argue all the time, well, we should lower the minimum wage. We should raise the minimum wage. What is the effect the minimum wage would have on the economy?
The most scientific thing difficult about econ to test is econometrics, you know, which is basically a mathematical model. Is it mathematical modeling? Is that the right way to say it?
I think it includes mathematical modeling and, mathematical metrics that you can model and use as dependent and independent variables.
Right. They take historical data and then they try and figure out how to drop out variables until something stays.
Right.
And then
right.
they say, oh, that's the cause.
And the reason why economics is difficult to do, the same with sociology and psychology, is the laboratory is not as well controlled.
The laboratory being the world.
Yeah, it's the world. And that's difficult to do experiments on there. And you can rarely do it on full-scale things. This is why people argue about the weather and climate change.
Do you have any feelings about the Skinner box?
What's the Skinner box?
The B.F. Skinner box. Stuck his kid in a box. Did you know that?
What?
Yeah, he was a behaviorist.
Okay.
You should look that up.
We did a lot of weird experiments like that, shaming school children and things like that, which actually gave us some very insightful data. But since then, institute review boards who handle human subjects research have said it's not worth the trauma.
So the scientific method is what, 500 years old-ish?
That's a good question. How old is Newton?
I don't know.
I mean, it was certainly before Newton.
Okay.
Newton was sort of the beginning of the Renaissance of it all. But yeah, so I don't even know. I'm not a historian.
Okay.
Well, I just use the darn thing.
It's less than 1,000 years old.
Yeah, it is. It is right. Relatively new in human history.
And it's more than 400 years old.
I will go with that.
Okay. In recent memory, there were some examples of science gone tremendously wrong.
And that would be?
Nazi Germany.
Yeah, and I actually visited Dachau and saw blow-up copies of the notebooks where, what is it? Who was the crazy guy?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We know
you know, and we learned about hypothermia and putting people in ice water.
Right.
Which, by the way, if you're a pilot that falls into the ocean, is valuable information. But I think if you had an institute review board, you'd say you can't just put innocent people in ice water and measure the body temperature.
You can't just put guilty people in ice water.
Actually, you can, actually, as long as you have informed consent and you say, look, here's what we're going to do. You know what it is. As soon as you actually have medical distress, we'll help you.
The word
you
were looking
you.
For was unwilling.
Yeah, unwilling. That's the thing.
Gotcha.
So the Army does all sorts of weird stuff. I mean, they put thermocouples up your butt and they send you off into the desert.
Because you
signed
a piece of paper.
You actually have
to
sign something to do it. And the point is, if you're doing a test which gathers valuable information about the survivability of personnel in the field, and as soon as you have distress, it will say there. As soon as you have distress, you have to indicate it thusly, and we rush in and we terminate the experiment, and we, you know, get you medical attention.
Come back to my gross connection to Nazi Germany.
Nazi Germany. Yeah.
There are times when people will say things like science is neutral. Science is a practice. It can only be.
Well, we want it to be neutral, but because humans do it, it's a little messed up.
Right, right.
It's so, never completely neutral.
So without diving into any sort of ethical question, into any sort of philosophic question, we can just, you and I can sort of say, yeah, there were scientists in Nazi Germany who used unwilling human subjects that the state had kidnapped for them. Right?
Yeah, and we kind of did it at the Tuskegee experiment as well.
Yeah. And
pretty bad.
It was pretty bad, but not on the scale, and that's why I'm using Nazi Germany instead of America. You know, because America first, except when we're talking about responsibility. Oh, shit! Excuse me.
And so, you weren't going to get political.
I'm not political. I didn't say anything.
All right.
I don't think. Anyway, so science, science is a tool like anything. It's like a gun. You know, if you point it in the wrong direction, somebody gets hurt. If you use it inappropriately, it is a damaging thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you use it correctly, although with the gun metaphor, it falls apart because if you use a gun right, people die. But it's a tool. It's a hammer.
Right.
Is there any understanding of science is a hammer so everything looks like a nail, even the stuff that's not a nail? You know that old saying, the proverb?
Yeah.
It's not a proverb. That's in the Bible, isn't it?
When humans are involved, it gets messy. So I'm gonna go.
You keep saying that.
Well, yeah, this is the great paradox that humans, we're just goofy. So, for example,
you got to give me some more.
I'll give you an example. So Isaac Asimov's novel, iRobot. And Isaac Asimov is a PhD chemist. He is a scientist.
Dr. Asimov.
Yes, absolutely. And
Dr. Asimov was the shit. Can we just say that?
I agree with that. Even though I believe one of the guys on his thesis committee said, "You're a horrible writer. You should never do this."
And he might have been. But you know what? The thing about writing,
I enjoy his
the more you
stuff.
Do it, the better you get
at it. So in iRobot, basically the logic of the, you know, the robotic mastermind that told all the robots to, you know, take over the human world. Yeah. The logic was humans are, we're nuts. We're irresponsible. Look at the stupid stuff we do. And the logic was, hey, you know, we need to take over the human world for your own good because you're just going to kill each other.
Hey, you get off of my cloud.
You cannot argue with that logic. I mean, my logic is undeniable, I believe, was the line from Vicky, the cybernetic brain that was taking over the planet.
Except, right?
Except it's
the
just...
The rules for that logic were provided to Vicky.
Right, right. And the human interpretation is that... what did the robot Sonny say? It just sounds so mean or cruel. We value freedom and freedom of choice over that for no good scientific logical reason. Another good example is the fact that, yesterday it rained, but on Tuesday I rode my motorcycle into work. No good logical reason to do that. It's significantly more dangerous. The odds of me getting killed are high. Granted, I get better gas mileage. I pollute a little less per capita, per commuter. But that does not justify me doing that. I do that for a very human reason.
Wait. The justification. You're saying that the percentage chance of
motorcycles should be banned. Motorcycles should be made illegal. If we were just scientists, we would say...
You mean based on the evidence?
Yes. These are dangerous. They're horrible. And pretty soon, we'll have these robotically assisted and robotically driven cars. Traffic accidents will be negligible. And we'll have a hard time finding organ donors, frankly.
I find that impossible to believe because no matter how,
It will never go to zero.
Something works.
It will never go to zero, but it will be significantly reduced.
But when it does happen, it'll be catastrophic. You know, it's like this is not a direct analogy. This is simply a metaphor. If your typewriter died in the middle of your novel.
Mm-hmm.
You would not be able to finish the page you were working on unless you used pen and paper. If your computer died in the middle of your novel, poof, no more novel, right? The sort of
automation. Well, of course, you backed it up, right?
So you say.
Yes,
right?
Okay.
What if the last backup was a problem because your time capsule, this is a Mac thing, your time capsule choked or a rat ate through
the cord? Even worse, nobody uses cash anymore. It's all electronic bits and bytes.
These are my
points,
right?
We could bring the whole economic system down, yes.
Let's stick with the cars and the typewriters, okay? So if regular cars... driven by people or typewriters where, you know, oh, crap, and you rear end someone and everyone behind you goes, oh, boy, and slows down and, you know, gets around you and says, I got to get to work and I don't have time. If a bunch of automatic, you know, driverless cars all get the wrong data because something is
goofy.
Yeah,
there's potential for problems,
Boom, right?
Yeah.
And if
we
that
are
data
more susceptible
wrong,
to a certain type of perturbation
exactly.
of the system.
Yeah, and, okay. And it's much more serious.
Right.
If everybody's going 100 miles an hour and somebody's tire blows.
Right. And that's the lesson of iRobot. If all the robots say, hey, we're taking over the place, then you got some problems.
Do you think Skynet's coming?
We could do three shows on that
thing.
I think we need to worry about Skynet. But so, for example, the reason I'm an engineer. We're very practical.
I don't think that's true, Pete. I think that you're messy.
But there's a human side to me.
And goofy.
And that is embodied by a quote I read on the internet. I don't know who said it first, but someone said, cars transport the body, motorcycles transport the soul.
Aww.
And that is the human part of me and my friends in physics like Ed Greco and Mike Schatz and other folks here like Craig Forrest over mechanical engineering. When you get on a motorcycle and you're just going, you just feel good. That's it.
So why, if we started with what is science, do we end with you on a motorcycle? What's the, how do we get here?
I think because our next podcast is going to be what is the humanities.
But you're setting up a segue. But
it's the humanities bleeding into science that allow me to tell jokes about it. That's it. Right there.
Yes, you can tell jokes about it. But you could tell jokes about anything, right? You know, so science has flaws just like anything. Science has flaws like people. Science has flaws like the film version of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? But what is it? Why is it okay that there are the flaws, right? So is science a practice or is it a belief?
I think it's a practice. Belief has no room in science. There's no room for belief in science.
Why does it then get challenged by your soul being free on a motorcycle?
Well, I don't think that's science. This is where science breaks down, right? Science would say we should outlaw all motorcycles, but people that enjoy it just do it, and we're willing to take that risk. It's not a logical risk. Vicky, the computer brain from iRobot by Isaac Asimov, would say, I'm going to outlaw motorcycles because this is crazy. And then what did the protagonist in that movie do? Rode a motorcycle.
And
bam!
Rose up and...
And they're just dangerous. They're just crazy. But the motorcycle worked when they shut down the power grid. So there you have it. Keep a motorcycle in your garage. That's the lesson from What is Science?
You've convinced me. This is Consilience with Pete and Charlie, a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities.
The unity of knowledge. I always like to say that part.
You can find us on Facebook, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, and you can always get in touch with me or Pete if you look on Twitter and other social media.
And can't you also find us on Tumblr at peteandcharlie.tumblr.com?
Thank you.